Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 45 of On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-monthly exploration of Southern Minnesota breweries and beer, coming to you here on 95 to 1 FM, 1080 KYMN Radio, or on podcast platforms in many, many places. I am one half of your co-host, Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson, and the other half.
You are the other half, that's correct. Good math. And we're pleased to have you with us today. Ira, why don't you do what you do, give the rundown of what's on today's show. And if you listen to the last show, you'll notice our guest today is not that guest that we promoted, because we've had some scheduling challenges, so we've had to adapt a little bit here. And fortunately, we've got someone in place for today's show, and it's going to be a good one at that.
As I like to say every show, it's going to be a fun one, but I'm really looking forward to this one because it's Steve Finney from Little Thistle Brewing Company out of Rochester, Minnesota. If you've been paying attention to our show, you've heard that name many times over the time period here. Pretty much any time you talk about Rochester, you end up hearing about Steve Finney because of the fact that he was the head brewer at Grand Rounds before moving on to some other stuff, and he was couple of people's mentors and everything else, and now he's opening his own brewery down there, which is
has
now
opened.
Has opened, has been open for a couple months. So the man, the myth, the legend will be in studio with us.
Scotsman.
So we'll have a chance to stop and talk to him a little bit about his beers and his vision for yet another brewery down in Rochester. So Rochester becoming quite the destination for brewing. And as always, we get a couple of good beers of the week brought to us by Firehouse Liquor, a couple of local ones, so they're going to be fun to talk about. And of course, we'll have Andrew in with some style of the week. This week, it's a wit beer. So, surprised we haven't talked about that one, but it'll be fun to hear a little bit more about that style. So, as I said, fun show coming up.
And we've got plenty of stuff that's coming from us as well. You know, surprisingly, we're all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Find us at OnTap Northfield on any of those mediums. Good way to keep up with us. We post photos and videos, and we're out and about visiting friends and different breweries and trying things, so you can always try to catch up with us if we're out. Facebook's also a good place to see what we have for upcoming shows. We've got a good show coming up. Stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us today by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. We normally have two offerings. This week we have three offerings, and they're all local. So this makes for a fun, you can
Sunday,
go
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. I feel like Monster Truck.
Yeah.
Level excitement for having three beers.
Yeah, but it's also what I love is that it's the local breweries. Breweries that you can go visit, but at the same time, if you don't have a chance to, swing on over and pick up a couple beers from Sean over at Firehouse.
Which is open Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
There you go. And our first offering is coming out of Badger Hill in Shakopee. It's their Goldie Ale, Golden Ale. So a little bit of a tongue twister on that one, but really nice, easy drinking beer here coming in at 4.9. So not quite sessionable, but pretty close. 18 IBU. So nice, easy drinking beer for, this is the beer you put in your fridge for those, darn friends of yours that come over and keep expecting Mick Golden Light. Say, no, here, have a real man's beer. But it's light, easy drinking, well worth the taste.
It's time to upgrade. Yeah, there's a nice flavor burst here. I like it. Like you said, pretty close to sessionable, so you can knock back a few at a fire this fall or watching football, whatever you might be doing that would require a number of beers without being too silly. So a nice flavor. Golden Ales usually can be pretty nice if done well. This is one I would definitely say is done well. And speaking of done well, we've got a kind of a new old beer, I guess I would say, from Summit. This was originally released 2 years ago under their Unchained series. I don't know for sure this is the exact same recipe. If it's not, I know it's pretty darn close. But it's the Dark Infusion Coffee Milk Stout. And boy, oh boy, this is right up my alley. So definitely get a nice roast to it, nice coffee flavor. It's got that lactose in it, so it's got a little sweetness to it. But all around, just a wonderful little beer to drink, and it's available in six packs by can. It's out in taps. This came out earlier this month, and this is definitely a beer you should seek out because I told you to. I mean, it's a good beer to drink.
Oh, yeah. This one, it's really coffee forward. It's a big, bold flavor. This thing pours dark. I mean, it's a black glass of wonderfully
yumminess.
Tasty.
It's divine.
Yes. And I believe it must be the same recipe because it does even say on the can, back by universal demand.
Yeah, there you go. And the play on that back by universal demand tagline, you know, they've got a little space astronaut on there, some stars. So clearly they're playing on that. If you follow Summit on Twitter, they had kind of a fun Venn diagram recently. I won't spoil for you. Go look for Summit on Facebook, Twitter. I'm sure it posts on Facebook as well, but I'm a Twitter guy. So kind of fun. I know Brendan up there likes that. Their marketing guy likes to have fun with a lot of that stuff. So go look for them online, but also go look for them on the shelves because this is an outstanding beer.
And our last one is coming out of Indeed Brewing Company. It's their Fresh Hop Ale. And, of course, it's that time of year for some fresh hop beers, and this one doesn't disappoint. Comes in at a 4.9% ale brewed with fresh hops. And they list it as fresh, blueberry, and pine, and I will give it pine. I think I taste the blueberry behind it a little bit.
Subtle.
But I'm going to use a word that I don't use very often, but this beer is dank. It's got some pine to it. It comes through. It's got some flavor to this one.
And on this show, we never claim to have the most developed palate. So for us to draw out something like blueberry, unless it was maybe a little more prominent, would be hard for us. But someone who's trained and knows what they're talking about a little bit more than we do could maybe pull that out. So I'm not going to doubt that that's there for the right palate.
No, I think it's there. It's
I'm not saying you didn't say it was there. Yeah. I'm just saying I'm not, and maybe it's my head cold right now, but I definitely get the pine.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the pine's right up front, and it's almost like the blueberry's hiding between a couple pines, and but it's got just a little bit of that sweetness to go with the pine. But, yeah, if you like a wet hop beer, this is full flavor, really good beer. Comes in a big, 16-ounce pint can. So,
fresh hop is a great time of year. I know we joked basically year-round about my affinity for pumpkin beers, and I like nut brown ales. I like fall beers a lot. And I realize in those conversations, especially in the summer leading up to the fall, I never mentioned fresh hop beers, but I definitely enjoy fresh hop beers. There's something that a lot of the beer fans will chase when they come out because it's such a limited supply, such a short shelf life. So it's kind of interesting to see people online kind of keep eye open on when these come out and chase them down when they are out. You know, for the last several years here in Minnesota, Indeed's been one of the top ones. Surly, of course, with their wet, we talked about at the beginning of the show. Another one I really like is Castle Danger. Obviously, we're not talking about that today. But this is such a fun time of year when you have the harvest being yielded and using those ingredients as fresh as they can be. So definitely go check this one out, and I would encourage you to go try out other fresh hop beers. Imminent Brewing, downtown Northfield, has one right now. So another good option to go try.
And if you want to try either of these three beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on previous shows, they all can be conveniently found south on Highway 3 at Firehouse Liquor in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. We now have the pleasure to welcome in Steve and Don Finney of Little Thistle Brewing out of Rochester. They took the drive up with their two boys, and we're here to talk about beer. So good thing the boys aren't in the room, right? No, I'm sure they're well acclimated at this point.
Oh, yeah.
They can talk about beer just as much as we can.
Actually, our son was just saying about, beer names. We're always trying to find beer names for our beers, because it gets more difficult.
The more beers you make.
The more breweries, more beers you make, but all the best names are taken. It's a hard thing.
And they probably don't know most of the other ones, so the creativity probably just comes out with them.
Exactly. They're pretty good at it.
You kind of have to ping them for the pop culture references that might be useful.
Yeah.
Yep.
They got good ideas.
The Ron Weasley weed or something. Yeah.
Actually, we actually have a really good story if we can tell later if you want about when we're naming the brewery. Our oldest son, Duncan, actually had a great name, and we sat on it too long.
Oh.
So anyway.
No, we'll get to that. I love hearing about brewery names. I mean, the whole point of this show is to talk about the dreams and ambitions of these owners of these breweries and the brewers and kind of how things to come together. So that always starts at the beginning, right? The story's at the beginning. Mm-hmm. For those who aren't aware, Steve doesn't have a Rochester accent. So, and I don't know what a Rochester accent is anyway, but the point is, you're not from around here, right?
No, I'm from Scotland, from a small village in the northeast coast of Scotland. Just an hour from St. Andrews. That's the easiest place to talk about it. Everyone knows the home of golf, and St. Andrews is the famous golf course there.
So you're acclimated to the Midwest because you're already telling distance by time, right? Or is that more worldly than we give?
I think it's more worldly. I think it's, you know, yeah. just Scotland's pretty small, but it still takes some time to get from places, sure. different places. But it's exactly an hour on the train. I was on the train a lot as a kid and go around on public transport and stuff. Did not have a car until I moved to the United States because didn't need one.
Didn't need one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about this offline, but I'm going to inject now. My wife and I are planning our 10-year anniversary next year. We're looking at the UK. And,
okay.
And we, I don't know if I should say this, but I think we're going to end up in Ireland. But and that's the end of this interview.
Just turn around.
Well, unfortunately, I have friends in Ireland that I have the open invitation to go visit. But that being said, once I'm there, I'm going to explore everywhere.
No, so. We want to get around everywhere. We've done London and Manchester and part of that.
Oh, yeah.
Part of England, obviously. We haven't made up Scotland yet, though. So we're going to... Depending on how much child care we can get and how many days we can get away will dictate how much we travel. But anyhow, Scotland, born and bred, and came to Rochester for work, correct?
Well, I actually came to I went to the East Coast, and it is related to beer and craft beer. I went to grad school out in Massachusetts first. So I was out there for 2 years and then finished up my schooling. There was like a one-year internship at Mayo Clinic. In their sports medicine center. So that's what brought me to Rochester is it wasn't planned. We just go to school and then see what happens. Ended up in Rochester and then, you know, I suppose the story is that, you know, when I was in New England or in Boston area, you know, visit a lot of smaller breweries. That's when I kind of, you know, I was mainly my staple diet was Guinness when I first came over. But then, you know, hearing about these craft breweries, and I was a stout guy and then started trying some of these chocolate stouts or something, just, you know, that was not Guinness, but a stout.
Like Samuel Smith or Stateside?
Stateside ones. Yeah. So I'm trying to think, Harpoon was one of them. And they had their Hefeweizen too. And it was like, wow, these beers are great. They've got so much flavor. And, you know, I like Guinness and everything. And Guinness, you know, are phenomenal all over the world, right? But the flavor of these beers were great. So I think that's what first got me kind of started. And my palate started to change then.
What was the time frame? Is this like
that was 1996.
So late 90s.
Yeah.
So still pretty early in the craft scene. It was still in its infancy at that point.
I think so, yeah. I mean,
a lot of home brewing, but as far as a business market.
Yeah, yeah, no. And I started home brewing when I moved to Rochester because there was a brewery, a brew pub, and that was, you know, 1998. And that was before I met Don. Me and Don met in the early 2000s. But there wasn't really much going on in Rochester at all. So we started homebrewing. This is two of my buddies. One is from here in Minnesota, and then the other one is from Wales. And they're both scientists at Mayo. So I think they definitely encouraged the sanitation and cleanliness aspect, and that was good. But, you know, had a lot of
minor importance in brewing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Had a lot of fun, drank a lot of beers while we were doing it, but then it became more of a passion, obsession for me, and here we are now. So
those early influences, I'm curious about homebrewing, and obviously that's transcended here in the last 20 years that you've been brewing. What were those early influences? You said you came stateside, you started having more adventurous beers, fair to say, you know, because the American arrogance is like, oh, we're beer central, but America's not that old. Scotland's been brewing beer for 5,000 years.
Well, I probably didn't, you know, because of my age and getting into beer and stuff, you know, we got all the cask and beer engines and all those wonderful beers in Scotland and England. And so, you know, I drank those. I don't think my palate was ready for them. You know, you have to be just ready to, your palate to get used to these new flavors, and sometimes it just depends what you're around, you know. And so college and in the UK and stuff, you know, I was drinking, you know, Newcastle, which was pretty watered down stuff, brown ale, you know, although I think brown ales is a great category of beers, which is underestimated, and we're excited to make one soon.
So mass market, palatable.
So are we calling Newcastle the Mick Golden White of Scotland?
I did not say that. Of the UK, maybe.
Time,
I
mean, and place.
But then again, you know, hey, look at their model and how successful they've been. So who am I to critique that? But no, the early influences actually were, you know, yes, being around pubs in Scotland and England, and the pub You know, not so much from the actual beer, believe it or not, but the pub is a huge influence on our space. And the interaction and the customer service and all that kind of stuff. And we can talk about that. But the beer, really, be honest, the big influences on the beer was New England, yeah, and living there. And one of the biggest influences was my friend, Mike Goff, who's from Wales. So he moved to finish up some studying at Mayo. But his wife, who he met then, is from Portland. And so she came from Portland to do her training at Mayo Clinic. And so once the two of them got together, there was this, you know, cross-country shipment of beer that came from Portland, Oregon. And so Black Butte Porter, you know, Mirapon Pale Ale, just all these things got pushed in front of me that came in 750 bottles from his in-laws. And I think that was a big influence.
And Rogue back then, too.
Yeah, you know, sure. Rogue's Mocha Porter, you know, I remember having that, and it's phenomenal. Black Butte Porter, Mirapon Pale Ale. Just there's a lot of these beers.
It's kind of revolutionary in its time, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. they were
people
phenomenal.
Might hear that now, you know, the youngsters, you know, who are skinned to the craft beer and scene, but those were something different and wild.
No, they were great beers, and we got them. And Don, you know, I'd met Don at that time, and we were dating, and then we got married, but we hung out with these guys a lot, and so we drank a lot. We were making homebrews that we were thinking, God, could we make something like this? It was definitely a huge influence for us. And then, you know, those are the early influences, but then, you know, we went out and visited them in Portland, Oregon later, and visited a lot of the breweries there, and that was a huge influence. And then just, I think, I don't know, that time too is meeting Don, and Don also love craft beer, and from then on, anytime we traveled, we just visit breweries and mm-hmm. you know, all over the country, and then
good companion too. Both ways.
Yeah, I mean it's fun, right? I mean it's fun if someone really gets into this. It's great to you know, talk about the flavor profiles mm-hmm. and what it tastes like, but just to experience these cool places, you know. So the beer has to be good, but then you go somewhere and like, is the space cool? Can you see the tanks? You know, customer service, good, knowledgeable staff.
That's why I got into the show. My wife and I, we love getting out and visiting the spaces and stuff. Yep. And so that's actually how Corey and I kind of got connected a little better on this, was simply the fact that my wife and I are out visiting breweries all the time. You know, we enjoy them. If we're in the right space and I see a brewery around, I'm going to probably head over there and, go visit them.
So. Yeah.
We triangulate a lot of our travels between stuff for our kids and breweries, and then, you know, just cultural stuff when you're traveling in general. But we've had pretty good success with that, so we just kept doing it.
I remember being in Portland, Oregon, and Duncan was like not even 1 year old, and we went to a Hub, which is it Hopworks? No, it's in Portland, but we went there, and their focus all on bikes, like the Hub's mm-hmm. a bike and stuff. But they had the great beers, but they had a tiny little kids' PlayStation in the corner. And that was kind of revolutionary for us. Maybe it was also because we were sleep-deprived and all that kind of stuff with a young child. But it was like, you know, this huge influence on what we're doing now is being family-friendly, you know, kid-friendly, and, you know, and that's really important to us, you know. And, you know, I mean, when you got young kids or whatever, you know, all you need, I always say, is you just need 5 or 10 minutes of just peace.
Stimulate my child for a couple minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have adult conversation or just be, you know, left alone to cry in the corner.
You got it.
Whatever gets you.
A moment of zen, I always say. Just a little moment, you know, is nice.
So you're talking about all this good beer. You guys are, what, 2 months old, 3 months old at this point?
The 24th. Yeah.
August 24th was our official.
And so we're having a good beer right here. Why don't you talk us through this first beer?
Mine's gone already.
I know. That's why I figured we better get to it.
So one of the big influences that in the past 2 years, I think, for us is just being, you know, and it's, you know, our children are older. So it's not that our children are, you know, they're 9 and 12. So it's not as if we're sleep deprived anymore with that. But the idea of sessionable beers, and 5%, 4.5% beers is really appealing to us personally. So, you know, because at the end of the day, I want to drink more beer.
Sure.
But variety, that is. And I can't do that if I'm drinking a 9 or a 10%.
Well, you need to
beer.
Stay hydrated, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, long day of brewing.
Yeah.
Yeah, 9 or 10% is kind of your end of the day kind of a beer if you're sitting at home and around a fire, but not,
right.
not if you're going to visit a new city and plan right. to continue
put your feet
around
up, enjoy
and
a game on the
you know,
pitch.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well, right. I mean, if you want to.
You're trying too hard on
football
that.
References?
You're trying too hard on that one. I'm just going
to
call you
inclusive. Trying to be inclusive.
It's okay. No, it's good.
He's only effort. Been here 20 years. I'll be
it's
sure
a good effort, and it was appreciated. And
cheers.
A respectful comment.
So, for me, it's hockey. But, you know.
No, it's okay. We like the Minnesota United. I was up there for a watch a game a few weeks ago, and it was actually really cool because, you know, Surly is not far from that at all.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, talk about, you know, a combination of beer culture and soccer or football culture. It's
whole
great.
New district up there, basically, right yeah. there in the 280 line. We'll talk about that a little bit, too, about the growing communities and the hubs, I guess, regional hubs throughout the state. I want to get to that, but tell me about the Scottish Ale.
So, the premise of a lot of the beers are, you know, that we're making right now are like, you know, sessional beers, 5%, you know, or lower. But so this one is for the longest time, Jeannie Knieven, who works for a country malt group, her and her husband, Matt is the main person kind of behind the Growler magazine. So they own the Growler magazine. But Jeannie has worked for Summit and worked for other brewing, you know, businesses in the state. Now she works for Country Malt Group. So Country Malt, the ones who sell all the grain, the malt to breweries. And so been good friends with them for some time. And when we were focusing on starting our new brewery, I really had this kind of vision to make a Scottish ale. I always say this is a Scottish ale made by a Scotsman with Scottish malts, you know, and so it's really hard to do that, you know. You know, you got the trifecta there of someone. And the malts are all from Scotland. So this is from northeast of Scotland. They're Baird's. It's Baird's malt. And they came out with a special malt variety. Just it's a Scottish ale malt, and so I really want to get my hands on this and want to get it last year, and then they imported it this year, and I think we're actually the first ones to brew with it. I think we've made like 4 or 5 batches on this already, and Summit I think are getting some of it too. Jeannie told me, but we're making something in November.
Small
allegedly.
Brewery in St. Paul.
Yeah. But we were excited to get it first, and who knows, we might even
with
be
the chip
first.
Of the chance.
Yeah,
we might even be the first in the country to get it too, you know. But want to make something really authentic, and take it a step further than what we've done before. But the other thing that's really cool with this, the name is called Brave Woman, and maybe I should have. Do you want to tell the story of that, or should I?
Oh, I can tell the story.
You can tell the story. We don't cry.
I'll try not to cry.
It won't be the first time someone cried on the show. Ira's up 3 or 4 times.
We might cry at this. It's a good
story. It was a spilt beer, though,
yeah.
In my defense. But
so you know how hard it is to come up with a beer name, and we wanted something that was really truly Scottish and to give a nod to Steve's heritage and the beer style. And but we were having a horrible time coming up with something. And Steve's parents were here from Scotland to help us with the kids while we were doing the brewery build out. So they were here for 3 months. And while they were here, they were missing a ceremony for Steve's great-grandmother that was happening over on the northeast coast of Scotland. And she is famous, and is a national heroine for saving 15 fishermen. And over 100 years ago, she heard some screams coming from the shore from her house. And so she ran down to the beach, and there were 15 fishermen. A freak storm had come up, and their boat was capsizing. And so they were trying to throw her a line and couldn't get it to her. She ended up diving into the freezing cold North Sea, getting the line, getting back to the beach, wrapping the line around herself 3 times, and then calling all the fishermen to follow the line and they all made it to shore.
Wow.
So she saved the lives of all 15 fishermen, and then she took them home and cooked them dinner and made them tea, as you do. But one of the fishermen was so thankful that he wrote a poem called A Brave Woman, and the poem is just lovely. And so as we were talking about this amazing story, and they put up a memorial for her and had this big ceremony just recently, and so we were reading the poem, and we said, gosh, Brave Woman, that is just such a fantastic name. So you have to go through all the work, look it up to see if anybody else has taken it, and it hadn't been taken. And so that's where the name of this beer comes from. It's a direct connection to Steve's great-grandmother who saved all these fishermen and was a brave woman.
All right. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's probably the best beer name story I've ever heard. If anyone can top that, I'll be like surprised.
It's pretty good.
I would assume if it ever makes it into a can, that poem will be on the can.
Well, you know, yes, if we did a formal can versus a crowler. I think we've thought long and hard about what we're doing with some of our beers, and that one is a great story, and it's got a lot to do. It's tied up in our name and the thistle and all that kind of stuff too. So. You know, she met Queen Victoria, and I think this was presented, and she was like a heroine, and it's like the National Trust in Scotland is similar to like the National Park System over here. So, you know, there's like a plaque and everything, and, you know, it's for people who've, you know.
So are you going to have that poem on display somewhere?
Yeah,
or is it on display?
Well, it's not on display yet. We have it
on our kitchen table.
Yeah.
in a very, very tight frame. Which does not work.
I mean, poem kept pretty private, or is this something that took over the community in that area at that time and has maybe garnered some more attention beyond that? Or
I think so.
As a writer, I'm really curious about this poem.
Sure. It's actually when they just had this this big ceremony when they were presenting this plaque from the National Trust.
It was on the BBC.
It's on the BBC, and yeah. there's a story out on we should put it on our website. We don't have it up there yet, but.
Yeah, please do. Want to hear that. I'm not a poem person, but that sounds like something I want to read.
Understatement of the year.
Yeah. The thing is, too, is just so people know, the northeast coast of Scotland, that is people's livelihood is fishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's every time I hear this, it's like the movie, and I think Mark Wahlberg, Perfect Storm?
Yeah, Perfect
Storm. It's the Scottish Perfect Storm.
Yeah, you felt at home in in New England.
There you go. So.
We've talked on the show several times. You know, we have a sample segment from Firehouse Liquor locally here, and we'll get samples sent to us from different breweries throughout the state. And we always appreciate when there's a story, and whether it's authentic, like something like you guys shared, or something entirely made up just to sell beer, appreciate the effort, because if you can package it beyond the beer is what sells, at least what should sell, it should be a quality product. But if you package it in a nice looking can or a glass and it's got a nice story attached to it and
something to at least get people to pick it up off the shelf.
Yeah. Whether it's complete BS or completely real. Yeah, I mean,
we get obviously very lucky to be able to have a lot of those samples and try stuff where some of those things where I might not have grabbed it. So recently McKellar, had some beers in at Firehouse Liquor, which, at a pretty high price point, I might not have grabbed, but then all of a sudden we got a couple samples, and now all of a sudden I'm like, yep, I will put that in my cart and head out the door with it. So it is amazing the marketing. Unfortunately, the marketing has to go with it to get people to actually just try a beer. But that being said, around, this is a really tasty beer. I really do appreciate
it's 5%. You know, and going back to the beer, you know, it's really a lot of, you know, bready, caramel, chocolatey, biscuity kind of notes. You know, it's got a lot of flavor. It's got a lot of flavor. There's no chocolate malt in there at all. It's this the Baird's Scotch Ale malt, which is pretty
nice. Well, and you talk about the caramel and the chocolate in this. I pick up the sweetness, but it's not super sweet. It's not, and, you know, especially not attenuation at all. It's a really nice flavor, but it also... the flavor doesn't linger. It just kind of like tails off nicely. You know, it's a really nice mouthfeel to this beer. So I really do enjoy this one.
And this is our first beer that's on tap at Bar Buffalo in Rochester, a brand new restaurant. It's our friends, Chris Fierce, who's the owner. So, our first tap line. So this
your first tap account?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where's that located at?
It's on Historic...
Third Street.
Yes. So downtown?
Right downtown.
That being said, I guess we didn't even ask this question earlier. Where are you guys located? We've talked to a lot of the other Rochester breweries, but I guess we didn't even ask. Where are you guys located?
We are not downtown. I think we actually did look at a piece of property that was really close to Forager. And at one point, you know, we're good friends with them. They were even potentially going to do food for us. We're that close. They would have run food to us, which has been great. But that piece of property fell through, and then we're actually not far from Forager at all, so we're in the northwest. We're kind of equidistant between Forager and LTS. So we are considered Northwest, in a little industrial kind of area, right next to a big Pepsi plant. And we have a 5,200 square foot warehouse, a building, which is a former truck loading dock that sits on almost 2 acres. So we have lots of parking, lots of outdoor space, and I think a really, what's that?
The bike path.
Right by the bike path, yeah.
Okay. So kind of off of 14?
I know people ride bikes.
So right off, actually, it's right off of, when you say 40, right off of 52. Yeah, it's where 52
just
and
south
14.
Of 14.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kind of meet.
Easy to get to.
You know where John Hardy's barbecue is?
Oh, yeah.
Most people know that place.
Yeah. It's behind it's right that. Yeah. Right. Just to the west of that.
Colonial Lane's bar.
You are still pretty close to downtown.
Yeah, it's really right. close. It's really close, but it's.
We're like.
For
mile,
those coming from Northfield,
from
you're going to be able to easily find it.
Yeah.
Coming right down 52 and like, hop right off.
No, it's great. I mean, it's so we really like the location. And it's nice and quiet out there, and we have a nice big patio. Like I said, lots of parking and room to do lots of fun stuff, which we plan to do.
So last question on this beer. Mm-hmm. As a Scotsman, did you feel obligated to do a Scottish ale? I mean, do you feel
I think it's a style. I mean, there's many styles, I believe, that are just kind of underrated. And I think Scottish ales is one of them. Brown ales is another one. You know, English milds, bitters. All those ones are just styles which I think are great. And
Steve's just out to make a Scotch ale sexy again.
Yeah.
It doesn't get enough credit.
Well, these are styles that kind of get overlooked in today's market. And
they do.
I like these beers because they challenge expectations of people. And that a lower ABV naturally means lower taste, lower enjoyment factor.
You know, it's like it's an amber beer, right? If you make it really, really basic, it's what it is. It's an amber beer. It's very much... one of our other beers, our IPA, surprisingly, right? Hazy IPA is our biggest seller. Mm-hmm. But this was kind of the leading one, too, especially if people know the story and stuff. And because we are, we're not ramming it down people's throats about being a Scottish-themed brewery or nothing. But it's a part of our story. Then I think people... are more obliged to drink more of it.
To go back to that, then, you talk about that being part of your story and part of your heritage. Your family was over. Did you have to run it by them to show them that this is a beer that you'd like to name after, heritage?
I think you passed it by my parents, my mom, and then you also passed it by all our staff. Because I thought, God, brave woman, I don't know, is that good, is that bad?
Will it hook
people? And then once you tell people the story, it's like, you have
people
to
People were in
that.
Tears, and I was like, it's going to go.
Were they
real
tears, honestly?
Yeah.
Real tears.
Real tears.
Wow.
I think something as poignant as that is worth the risk when there's so many dumb beer names out there that you weren't really going to strike out with it. So,
well, it's kind of a timely name as well. Mm-hmm. I think "brave woman" means a lot of different things to a lot of different
in
people.
World, yeah.
Right, but then when you hear the story, then it really kind of knocks you off your seat.
Well, and it ties into the heritage of both the brewer and the beer and everything else. Yeah, I think it's a home run in the way of a name.
Yeah.
So,
and like I said, is the malt is all from there, the same part of Scotland, so it's
Northeastern,
super excited to get it, so we it's going to be on tap all the time. This beer.
Well, I think from a business perspective, one of our goals has always been to really like open up the craft beer scene in Southeast Minnesota, and Northfield's got a couple awesome breweries, and then we've got a few popping up around the local area, and Rochester's just starting to get really more density of craft breweries. And so one of our goals was really to make kind of accessible, drinkable craft beers that people didn't feel overwhelmed by. And we'll do some, unique and experimental and kind of crazy beers.
Right now.
Yeah. But, having something like this that you can say, this isn't a hoppy beer. It has a little bit of sweetness. And, people hear the story and they say, yeah, I'll try it. And then they come back for it because they actually, now they know that they like it. And then they'll try something else. So.
So your first homebrew 15, 20 years ago was as good as this, right?
Yeah, right. I think it was a brown ale or something. And, for a lot of people who are homebrewers, you think in Minnesota, one advantage of brewing a beer in the winter, you think, oh, I can just like stick outside and it'll chill like in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Absolutely not, right?
Expedite process.
Yeah, so
who's got time to
like
wait?
That. It didn't happen like that, but so I don't know. I think, no, it didn't at all. I mean, but, you know, the homebrewing stuff is like, I don't know. It's all about cleanliness and sanitation. And then, you know, then you get more toys and you get a temp controller that takes over your fridge.
And just grown.
Yeah, I started doing extracts for a long time.
Which is what everyone does, right?
Yeah, and, and that was good. And, you know, then did all grain and then got, you know, the, you know, I think the temp controller for the fridge to be able to dial in that stuff is huge. Starting yeast starters, you know, and building up your yeast. That stuff's huge too. Those are probably the two most important things, the yeast and the temp control.
And the reason
once you dial that in, you're...
Yeah. And the reason I bring up home brewing again is because at some point in that journey of brewing at home, you decide to make this gigantic leap to leave your profession that you've been working toward for years to start a brewery in Rochester, one of the first Grand Rounds Brewing Company, which you were involved in.
Well, I mean, I think, so the story with that, which some people know, is that, you know, we bought secondhand system, a kegel system, you know, so three half barrels, right, with propane burners underneath them, a frame, all hard piped. And it was, I mean, I dreamt about this thing forever because I wanted to buy it. And then we got it and then started to learn how to, you know, do the all grain thing and brewed some beers. And by that time, even before that, Don, you know, around about that time, Don says, you know, this is costing us a lot of money. It is, you know, homebrewing isn't cheap because it's just like toys, you know. Anyone who hunts or fishes or anything around here, you just get toys.
That's why it's your CEO, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Of Little Thistle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she did say to me, she, you know, so I think it was her idea and maybe her idea and a friend's idea at the time said, you know, you should start like a beer club because I have a you know, a book club. And so you should start a beer club. So what we did do, I contacted like 15 of my guy friends and said, look, if you give me $100 each for the year, you can come to my house once a month and drink as much beer as you want. And so, and I'm sure there's some legalities behind all that stuff, but hey, it was a donation. And
you're a nonprofit.
It really allowed me to experiment with, you know, yeast strains and different malts. And really, you know, you just have, you know, I have the donations and to experiment. And, you know, a big influence around that time, too, is, you know, my mom and dad were in Scotland and BrewDog were just starting. And two young gentlemen over there who become probably one of the biggest, you know, breweries in the world. And I get paper clippings and we'd get their beers and we'd mess around. And they were being really experimental, too. And so that was a big influence on me, like making the same beer, but then split it three different ways to three different yeast strains and then to different profiles. And it's just fun. It's fun and to play around with it.
He also had a lot of guys in his beer club had really good palates and they drank a lot of really good beer. And so he had a really good, you know, kind of quality.
He let you know when you missed.
Well, and I think that's the thing that with homebrewing. Homebrewing is great. And a majority of the time,
free beer is the best beer.
Well, free beer is best beer, you know. Are your good friends really going to give you a good quality, you know, good feedback?
Yep.
But this was like, you know, I demand feedback from you guys. This is what we're doing. And I knew the beers were turning out clean. The question was, is it representative of certain styles, right? Do you like it? Is it palatable? All this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I had the sanitation stuff down. And now you're trying to dial in all the other stuff, you know. You're trying to recreate this or this. And so that did that for several years. And that was fun. You know, it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. And people come to my house and, you know, very sociable. And, but yeah. And then, you know, I'm trying to think, you know, I'm a physical therapist, my background, and went to school for way too long and have too many student loans, all that kind of stuff, you know. And I worked at Mayo and had a great job, you know.
Mm-hmm. Basically, we had friends that owned a restaurant and they approached us and said, we want to start a brewery and we want you to co-own this brewery. And so we talked about it and we, you know, decided, you know, sometimes you just take a leap. And so we made the choice to do it. And so Steve was co-owner, he was head brewer and head of brewing operations, all that. He was making some great beer. Yeah. Unfortunately, it was not a great business partnership. There were some expectations that just weren't met. And so it was, it was the best choice for us to
absolutely
not be there anymore.
Yeah. We learned a ton. Don't get me wrong. We learned a ton, and I learned a ton about brewing beer. Me and Don were felt like we were embraced, but also really, I suppose, welcomed by the craft beer culture. We were really like, that was incredible. The experience of just in Minnesota, how great other breweries are helping each other out, but then also, we took upon ourselves, to go to the Great American Beer Festival, and we met people there. We went to the World Beer Cup. I mean, we pushed ourselves to get out there and do a ton of stuff. And that was purely just me and Don. And because we love beer. And we love the passion of beer. And so we did that. And we learned a ton. And I think we learned that we don't want anything to do with food or restaurant. We want to focus on beer, and we know beer.
We also learned that we only want to have each other as business partners.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's where it comes.
It is a business, and, there's a lot of things that go along with having a business that are not very fun. And so we had some hard lessons there, but yeah, we came out on the good side.
No, I think really at the end of the day, and neither have we been to our new place, but our new place is always what we have wanted. It's what we never could have done. We never would have been able to achieve that in the location or with the business partners we had. What we have now is way better, beyond our wildest dreams. And, it's ironic because I told you that there was a piece of property that fell through in Rochester. And our whole business plan to our investors was small, quaint, really cozy little tap room. Well, that fell through. And then we saw this huge, 5,000 square foot truck loading dock. And I saw it and I thought, wow, this is beyond kind of what we're thinking. But God, this could be super cool. And I know Don thought it was a little crazy and stuff. But, it's what we've seen, throughout the country. You guys know this. When you go to other cities, it's very commonplace that someone's taking a warehouse in an industrial area and turn it into a brewery. And it's phenomenal. A big open space. It helps revitalize the area, economic growth. And it was like, wow, we could really do this. And it was, like I said, it was this truck loading dock. And people in Rochester, really demand parking. They want parking. They yep. want to be able to park mm-hmm. right there next to it. And I get it. And we thought we can deliver with this. And we're right on the bike path. And we have space to do whatever we want. Music events, beer festivals, whatever. And that's the kind of stuff we're going to do. So
before we go any further, we've loved the Scottish Ale. But you have two other beers here.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Which one would you like us to try next?
Okay, this is our this is the Wetlands. It's a hazy or northeast style IPA. Again, it's a 5% ABV and 50 IBUs, but juicy, fruity, really
rock
nice
solid.
And
it's actually hazy too.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot recently that have been clear.
Yeah, no, I mean this is in general. I think I really enjoy the challenge of making beers and lower alcohol with lots of flavor. And I think, I think this one turned out pretty damn good. We're really happy with it. It's Mosaic, Citra, and Denali hops. And so, it's a lot of those tropical notes. A lot of oats.
I love oats in the beer.
I've got oats, sweet, lactose,
This is our number one seller.
I was going to say, does this do pretty well?
Mm-hmm.
It does. Well, it's does smooth. Really good. You talked about
the oats there.
Right? Even though you have all the hops and everything else, it's a really well balanced, nice, easy to drink. But like Corey brought up, very hazy. This has not settled out in the keg at all.
And this is from a batch that was made 3 weeks ago, so it's been sitting around.
Nice.
So it's still keeping it.
That's good shelf life.
We're pretty happy. Yeah,
you still get that sweetness from it, and.
Yeah, no, we've been really happy with it. And so, we're making beers that we enjoy too, but we like all beers, so it's not
well,
too,
it's nice and citrusy, hand, right? But only coming at 5%. So, yeah, it's an easy drinker. Yeah, I can see why they'd be very popular in the tap room. Lots of people coming in, be able to have multiples and enjoy this one.
I'm sure you've done plenty of research on this style.
Yeah.
And I mean that genuinely.
Yeah, yeah.
But, 5% ABV seems, for an IPA, just seems low at surface level. I mean, for those listening, does that just play to your interest in keeping more sessionable styles? And how do you do that? Do you just add a little more water to thin it out? Or how does someone get it down to 5%? Because I would think hazy beers are typically 6-7. And for those listening, they may not have any idea where
they
should
be. I think you said, typically they are. I mean, I think that's where they are. But I don't know. I mean, I just think it comes back to knowing Rochester. And we've been there for 20 years. You know, I've been there a little bit longer than Don, but we both lived in Rochester. We've watched the culture, the beer culture grow. And I just think we felt, you know, if we're going to, you know, we decided to take a second leap of faith and start our own business and build this on this big piece of property and do all that stuff, we got to make really approachable beers. We've got to make stuff that's very drinkable at 5%, at least to open with.
Mm-hmm. And I think from a business perspective too, you know, you want somebody to come in and have a couple.
Sure.
And because we also want to make our beers affordable. And so a pint of beer is $5. And, you know, you can come in and have three beers for $15.
Over a couple hours.
Right.
Be okay.
Right. Yeah. And you know, at a 5% beer, it's a little more feasible to do that. Yeah.
But if you've got a tulip of a 9-ounce beer,
right.
Thanks for your $7 purchase. I got to go.
But at the same time, I'll point out that, and I may be an idiot on this, but from an IPA standpoint, generally when I think of a 5%, I'm most expecting it to be a little too sweet because the yeast haven't eaten up the sugars and everything else. And this is not sweet at all. It's a really nice, well balanced, yet at that 5%. Is that something you consciously did during the recipe to make sure that you're hitting that 5% kind of level?
Absolutely. It's all intentional. The word that we use all the time, it's all strategic, you know, because it is a business. And why are you making certain beer styles? And we're making this beer style because these are the number one selling beers in the U.S. But then we had to, you know, just shift it a little bit to the Rochester market and what we thought. Again, whether we're right or wrong, but we strongly believe that, you know, just making a little bit lower alcohol, very approachable. And it's fun in our tap room to see people drinking this beer, people of all walks of life who wouldn't even try this, or people who've said to us, you know, what fruit is in here? Or, you know, what's in here? It's like there's no fruit at all. It's the hops and the malt bill all together. The combination has made this really nice, juicy kind of fruity beer.
So, nice. I think you nailed it. I think it's outstanding.
I love it. And like I said, I was a little surprised that with the 5% without finding some sweetness to it, especially if you're using the Citra hops and some of the other stuff, that really a tasty beer.
No, I mean, it ferments all the way out. And then, but you've got, like, you know, you got oats, you got lactose, you got other stuff that's going to give you those, you know, the lactose particularly
all day long.
Helps give you, you know, more mouthfeel, you know, a little bit of residual sweetness.
He's making a double of this, though, too.
Yeah,
so
tomorrow we're making a double. So
we'll have to have you back for our next week's show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you guys should come down, but for sure. But yeah, we're going to make a double IPA of this tomorrow. So we're just easing into those things, too. But we still haven't lost
sight
of
only 2 months
of the sessionable stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been making a lot of beers, which is great.
Oh,
it's good.
If he could just brew beer every day, then he'd be happy.
Based on your Instagram account, it seems like it sometimes.
Yeah, I guess we didn't ask for that. What is your capacity? What are you brewing at? What's your system?
We're a 10-barrel system.
Okay.
So it's the same, you know, I'm thinking same. I know Tanzenwald here in town.
It's
actually,
like a mid-size.
It's exactly the same system as they have, actually.
Okay.
I came up and looked at their brewery a while back, or... we know a Dangerous Man, they're a 10-barrel system. And our business model is similar to that, you know, in the sense that primarily taproom sales, that's our goal. You know, we can put stuff out on tap, but really our business model is really on having a space, a destination where people will come, enjoy the space, enjoy the beer, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's really what we're all about. So a 10-barrel system with a few 20-barrel tanks too. So we can double capacity. I mean, we can make a lot of beer. We can, which is great. And but we're still just trying to figure stuff out. 8 weeks old. So
before we wrap up, I do want to touch on, you guys are the fifth brewery to open in Rochester. Mm-hmm. You guys have for a few years by having four breweries have been a destination. You guys add to that. We've got a couple more on the books. Adam, your good friend Adam's opening up. Thesis Beer Project.
Yeah.
Tell me about the culture around that. I mean, obviously, you were involved with that initially with one of the four. Now you've got your own brewery.
Yeah.
There's a six for sure, possibly a seventh. What does that mean to Rochester? What does that mean to you guys be part of that? Obviously, you're friends with Forager. You're over with Austin a couple weeks ago brewing a beer.
Yeah.
Adam was just over helping you brew a beer, I believe. Very collaborative nature. We talked about kind of the community statewide, but clearly in Rochester, you've got some friends there, and you guys are becoming a destination.
Yeah, and I think, you know, LTS and Kenny Creek and with the Sospir project coming, I think the community can support it, clearly. And we want to be one of those destinations. We want to be a place, you know, where the more places you have, the more beer tourism that we can create with multiple breweries, people will come and they'll stay overnight. And that means a hotel room. And that means, you know, investment into other local shops and restaurants. And, you know, so we want to be part of that in creating, you know, part of the local economy. And plus it just helps the community, like the beer community.
Yeah.
So for us, it's just, you know, that collaborative nature of being able to talk beer with your colleagues. And, you know, Steve has that with Adam and Austin and the other breweries in town. You know, so it's just really exciting.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, when I was at the Prior Brewery too, you know, one of the things I wanted to do was do a beer festival. And that really, you know, I'd laughed, but that became Kegs and Barrels. And so they will evolve into something, whether it's still called that or evolve into something else. It's still high on our list to do an annual beer festival or something that unites all the breweries. And that's really, it's really important to do that. And so we continue to, you know, create, or I shouldn't say create, but it continued to grow the craft beer culture, which is in Rochester, because, you know, obviously, you know, Forager have done a great job, and people are driving down and check out Forager. They really are. Mm-hmm. And so it's great, you know, and we have that traffic, and then people drive on down to Decorah too, you know, because there's a brewery down there too. And so
little guys with a dinosaur, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we can all benefit from this. Mm-hmm. And so it's just all working together.
Some
to,
lady
to do
name,
stuff.
I think, right?
Yeah. So it's all good.
Looking into later in this fall and into the new year, what can people expect from you guys in terms of beer, what you want to do with the beer, any events you may host? Maybe it's too early for that, but
today, October 27th from 10 to 4, we're hosting the Rochester Record Show. So there'll be 8 to 10 vendors with all the cool vinyl. You can come and have a beer and peruse vinyl and maybe start your collection or build on your collection.
No, we have, I mean, there's that. I mean, we're continually having folks in our space. I think for the future, you know, the beer I made with Adam, we're probably going to put it in a barrel and barrel age it, because it's a big Belgian double. We've got a few collaborations planned with Forager. A few collaborations planned with some Minneapolis breweries too. So we're pretty excited about all that stuff. I mean, I don't know, we'll make bigger beers than 5% too, you know.
There's nothing wrong with 5% beers.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
I think you know that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, no, we're excited to continually just work on supporting local and getting local people into our space. And hopefully people will also drive from Northfield and other places, too, and check us out.
So when can people visit you, and where should they look online to keep up to date with beer releases, events, and hours?
Yeah, we're on our website is littlethistlebeer.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're closed on Mondays. We're open Tuesday through Thursday from 3 to 10, Friday and Saturday from noon to 11, and Sunday from noon to 8.
Very family
pretty big
friendly.
Hours, yeah.
Yeah, we're very family friendly. We've got shuffleboard, we've got some arcade machines, and that was a big part of what we wanted. We want kids to be able to come in and be able to, you know, find something they can do and their parents can relax and have a beer at the same time.
Yeah, so really are we talking the shuffleboard, the smaller little shuttlecocks that you slide on the table or the actual ground?
No, on the table.
Okay.
On the table, yeah. So we have that. And, and we're going to introduce vinyl too, and we play some music. And, you know, it's kind of evolving for us, you know, because the weather was pretty nice when we opened. The weather's changing, as we all know. And so we'll have some new events coming in, you know, to the tap room here soon.
Yeah, we really love the talk space, and we've had so many great stories that we've kind of run out of time here. But good to know about family friendly dogs also, right?
You guys are dogs on the patio.
On the patio.
Rochester, you know, I think they eventually will move, hopefully, to inside the tap room.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all going to depend on the city and what they allow us to do.
It sounds like a beautiful space. People should go visit Tuesday through Sunday. Steve and Don, thanks for coming up to Northfield and visit with us.
No,
thanks
thank
for
you.
Having us.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Hey, it's Andrew Burns coming at you with another style of the week. This week we're talking about a Belgian wit beer or wit beer. That's W-I-T, and that just means white. So this could also be called a white ale or a white beer. It's a Belgian beer, but it's a cousin to the German wheat beer. Unlike the Germans, the Belgian version uses an unmalted form of wheat, which adds even more haze and even more foam and even more cloudiness. And then that is paired with Belgian yeast, which have a lot of similar characteristics to Hefeweizen yeast. You still expect some banana-y flavors and some clovey flavors, but expect it to be maybe a bit more complex than that, have some fruity flavors that aren't necessarily banana, and maybe a complex bouquet of spices. The Belgian wit beer is usually moderate in alcohol, generally around 4.5 to 5%, and is a fantastic summer sipper, and can sometimes even be served with some fresh fruit, like a slice of orange.
Going to put a wrap on this show. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Lil Thistle Brewing out of Rochester. Definitely go give them a look and try out some of their beers. Obviously, they're doing a lot of cool things. That's really a growing community down there. Up to 5 breweries, got a couple more in the works. So we're talking about going to Duluth. Maybe in a couple years, we have to go visit Rochester, although that's not quite the trek.
No, but it's still a fun getaway.
Yeah, just down the road, an hour away. So we definitely recommend anybody go visit Lil Thistle or any of our other friends we've had the privilege to chat with down there. We'll be back in 2 weeks on November 10, 11 a.m. here on KYMN Radio 95 The One. We are chatting with Brenda and Ford from Turning Waters Back Alley Brewing out of Wabasha. You talked about your visit there a couple weeks ago on, I believe, last show or maybe the show before. I kind of shared my experience with them. All good stuff, obviously. So I look forward to chatting with those two. They're really good people, and Ford's been doing some really good stuff. I legally had his home brew. You had some of his legitimate legal beer. I imagine they're pretty similar, but we'll find out when they're visiting us here in Norfield. So I look forward to that conversation. As always, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for On Tap Norfield on any of those mediums, and you can catch up with what we're doing. Facebook, as always, is a good place to see who's coming up on future shows. As we alluded to at the beginning of the show, we're heading to Duluth. We got one episode before that, though. After Turning Waters, we're going to go visit Roats Brewing over in Jordan. Looking forward to that. I'm guessing that will be a small to medium hoot. We'll have a good time. Then we're going to hit the road and hit Duluth. So we've got a lot of really good, fun shows coming up. Really looking forward to that. OnTapNorfield.com is a good place to catch all our prior shows. If you've not had the pleasure to listen to our beautiful voices for 44 hours plus, I guess I should say, but most shows are around an hour, or head to iTunes, Google Play, or your podcast platform of choice to catch up on all those great shows that we've had. Again, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Cheers.